2 weeks ago, many of us learned about the discovery of unmarked graves, 215 of them, First Nations children at Kamloops Residential School. Some of them were as young as 3. And this filled many of us with sadness, anger, confusion, questions. And at the same time, I was thinking about how we've spent the better part of the last 9 months going through this book of Ephesians, looking at who is God, what God has done, and who we are called to be. And these past 2 weeks in particular, we just spent time in Ephesians 6, where Paul is talking about the spiritual battle that God's people are in, and how we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. And that one of the ways we wage war against the enemy is by being people who reflect the very character of Jesus. We resist the schemes, among other things, Paul says, by putting on truth, righteousness, and peace. And those were 3 things we talked about last week. And I just, in light of that and what happened in the past 2 weeks, I think it's important for us as a church to speak to that. And in particular, we have Luma Native Housing Society right next door to us. And we, in January, had invited Cheryl Bear to come and speak on just kind of understanding an indigenous history. And so it felt like, really, in light of what God calls us to be a people who reflect his character and resist the schemes of evil in our world, that I just wanted to speak to 3 things. One of them is that truth genuinely, truly matters. More of these kinds of cases will likely come up in our country. And as Jesus' people, we don't hide from the truth. We don't diminish the truth. We don't dismiss it. Even if it's uncomfortable, even if it highlights things that people who claim to identify with Jesus and follow him and serve him did it, we don't cover it up. We don't ignore it like it didn't happen. Or we don't go and say, well, they're not Christians. They fully identified as Christians. They sang songs to him. They prayed to him. They got it horribly wrong, too. And we don't cover that up. We are to be people who embrace truth wherever the truth is, even when it's identifying these evil acts that were committed by people who said Jesus is Lord. At the same time, righteousness matters. The cross tells us that God cares about evil, the presence of sin, and he cares about justice. And he calls out sin. Doesn't matter if it's God's people or it isn't. He calls it out. He's grieved by it. It wasn't his intention. It wasn't his plan. And as Jesus' people, we know that God actually took on the consequences of evil and sin upon himself through his son, Jesus. And we also believe that our basis for being made right with God is actually admitting we were wrong. Our basis for being made right with God is that we actually admitted we were wrong, that we missed the mark. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally, but we still miss the mark. We believe our standing before him is that we're holy and forgiven because Jesus is righteous and actually gave us his righteousness. Therefore, we shouldn't be afraid to face our own personal failures because we know that the arms of the Father will remain open. But similarly, we need to be humble and truthful to acknowledge any prejudice or indifference to the First Nations situation here in Canada. And we might be tempted to say that the people who did this aren't true Christians and dismiss them in that way. But like I said, they identified with Jesus and his church. And our cultural moment really emphasizes the individual. And so that's our own personal tendency as well, is to think of ourselves. But we can easily forget our oneness in Christ that Paul hit on throughout Ephesians. That we've been made one. We are his body. And so we can't just dismiss this. The people who committed many of the sins, harm, and evil at residential schools did this under the guise of serving the Lord, even though the acts were not of Jesus whatsoever. And we can't ignore this or sweep it under the rug. We can acknowledge the sins of our Christian brothers and sisters and even ask the Lord for forgiveness. And I want to suggest that we should. And I even think there's like a scriptural precedent for God's people doing this. You can see this in two places in the Old Testament. Let me give you them. One is in Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. Nehemiah is in exile. He's not in Jerusalem. He's not in Israel. And he prays this. He says, I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself and my father's family, have committed against you. We have acted very wickedly towards you. We have not obeyed the commands, decrees, and laws you gave your servant Moses. You notice that it isn't just Nehemiah talking about his own sin. He's actually talking about sin that he did not play a part in, people who lived before him. But he's coming to God and actually asking, confessing all of it, and asking that the Lord would be gracious. If you read in the book of Daniel, Daniel is interceding and asking for forgiveness on behalf of Israel. In Daniel 9, verses 5 and 6, he says, we have sinned and done wrong. We have been wicked and have rebelled. We have turned away from your commands and laws. We have not listened to your servants and the prophets who spoke in your name to our kings, our princes, our ancestors, and to all the people of the land. And when you jump down to verses 18 and 19, he says, we do not make requests of you because we are righteous, but because of your great mercy. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. One of the pictures we see of people who went before us is that despite them not necessarily being the ones who actually committed it, they actually go and intercede and ask for the Lord's forgiveness in humility. And Daniel recognizes, look, we're not asking for your forgiveness out of our own righteousness, but because you're merciful. Yet as Christians, we know that we've actually been given the righteousness of Jesus. And so we should actually be more than willing to acknowledge our own personal failures, because the Father will always embrace us. And we should be willing to acknowledge when other Christian brothers and sisters get it wrong, horribly wrong. And the third thing is that the gospel of peace matters. See, through Jesus, we have peace with God. Jesus reconciled us to the Father. And through that reconciliation, we are now able to be people who reconcile with others. Paul in Romans will call the Christians to live at peace with their neighbors, to the best of their abilities, to live at peace. And we often think of peace as simply living without conflict. But we fail to recognize that the Christian idea is actually much bigger than just no conflict. It includes that and much more. Speaks to something being restored to wholeness, to what it was actually meant to be. And so for us as Christians, we seek to live at peace with our First Nations neighbor, and it doesn't simply mean to smile and nod and say hi to them when we see them. It means we actually, to the best of our ability, pursue reconciliation and the shalom of God with them. And when and if possible, we support, serve, and yes, pray towards reconciliation and restoration. So how might we start to do that? Well, let me offer just a starting point, and by no means something that is exhaustive. I think we can take steps towards learning the First Nations history, culture, and traditions in Canada. And one place that offers a free course on this that you can do all online is the University of Alberta. It's actually a great resource. There's a couple of you already taking it. You could do it at your own pace, but it allows you to learn about the people who were here before many of us came and understand them in a different way. Secondly, we can actually just learn about the First Nations upon whose traditional territory we're gathering. For example, Cascades, we are gathered on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Coast Salish territories. Namely, the lands of the Squamish, of the Tsleil-Waututh, forgive me, I always get that one bad, wrong, and the Musqueam nations. And it's actually valuable to learn that, in particular, if many of you were so excited about having our neighbors next door. But we actually need to understand the history that they've lived before we came and now. And so part of that is just learning. The third thing I'd suggest is that we can actually read about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 94 Calls to Action. It's like a two-page PDF. You could straight up Google TRC 94 Calls, and it'd be like the first thing that shows up. It doesn't take you that long. And this is by no means exhaustive, but I just wanted to give us a picture for how might we just begin to take steps. A couple other ones you can give to organizations seeking to do great work. There's one here in Vancouver called the Urban Native Youth Association. They're based here in Vancouver, and their vision is to see empowered Indigenous youth leading and inspiring all nations. There's the Native Women's Association of Canada. They advocate for and inspire women and families of many Indigenous nations. If you want to read up on this, some of the stuff is already up on our website. You can just go to one of the tabs that just says racial justice, and there's information there. But I want you to know that as leaders, we've been talking about this, and we believe that this is something Christians in Canada should care about. And we're praying and thinking through what it looks like for our church to go beyond talking about it on a Sunday or posting something on social media. Those things matter, but our conviction is that they don't go far enough. And so we wanted to be intentional about speaking to that today. We're going to have to transition.